Well, I'm very glad to be with you here this evening. We have a kind of an extension, I guess you could say, of the topic that we studied last month, that being the tabernacle. And it involves Aaron's rod that budded. Now, this is a neat little story, and it's almost one of the stories that I've kind of misplaced, I guess, throughout the years. I've even done a lesson on part of it, the first part of it, but I don't know that I've ever continued out and actually studied about what this means. And what was the significance of Aaron's rod and the meaning that it had? And it's probably going to take me to a further study because it's going to get into that fun little book we like to talk about, Revelation. It even carries the idea of the rod all the way through Revelation. So, but that will come at a later time. But for a little while tonight, I want to look at this concept of Aaron's rod. In Hebrews, the 9th chapter, verses 10 through 4, Hebrews 9, verses 2 through 4, the Bible says, "For a tabernacle was prepared, the first part of which was the lampstand, the table, and the showbread, which is called the sanctuary, and behind the second veil, the part of the tabernacle, which is called the holiest of all, which had the golden censer and the ark of the covenant, overlaid on all sides with gold, in which were the golden pot that had the manna, Aaron's rod that budded, and the tables of the covenant." So inside the most holy place, there was the ark of the covenant. And inside the Ark of the Covenant, there were specific things that were found inside the Ark of the Covenant. So I'm still using my little card. I've got my little picture here, my Clint DeFrance picture. Inside the most holy place, you had the Ark of the Covenant. And on the top of the Ark of the Covenant had the mercy seat. And that's where those cherubims would come up and touch. And that's where the glory of God would appear. That's what it's called, that Shekinah light. The glory of God would appear on the holy seat. Well, inside of the Ark of the Covenant, you found three things. There was the golden pot that held a piece of manna. Then we had Aaron's rod that budded. And then we had the tables of the covenant, those the actual Ten Commandments. And that's what was held inside of the most holy place inside the Ark of the Covenant. So under consideration tonight is Aaron's rod that budded. What does that mean? What was the significance of the rod? What is a rod, first of all? What does the significance? We've got to get all the situation. We have to get all of the time frame together to understand what was happening to the children of Israel and why Aaron's rod budded. A rod's just a stick, by the way. It's nothing fancy. It's just a walking stick. It's a stick that a shepherd might use to go out and hit an animal with or get them out or chase something away. It's nothing more than a stick. In fact, Moses, remember how when Moses was there at the burning bush, that's all he brought with him was a rod. He had a stick out there, and he came up to the burning bush, and that's when he had to take his shoes off. He was standing on holy ground, and he said he had that stick, he had that rod. And God even asked him after a while, after Moses was complaining and didn't want to do his work, God even asked him, "Hey, what's that in your hand?" And Moses said, "Well, it's a rod. It's a stick. That's all it was. It was a stick." And they started to call that the rod of God. That's in Exodus 4:20, I believe. It's called the rod of God. Well, anyway, we have this rod, nothing more than a stick, but something happened to it. Out of this old stick, it budded. And we're going to see a pretty interesting story. What's the significance of it? Well, the first thing we have to do is talk about the rebellion of Korah. And I know we've talked about this because I've given a lesson. I'm pretty sure Moose had a lesson on it too. We've talked about Korah, but it's the rest of the story that takes us to Aaron's rod that budded. So we have to understand Korah first. Then we're going to have to understand that God had confirmation of Aaron and the Levitical priesthood. That's what the budding of the rod was about, that God was showing who was in charge and what he said went. And he gave them a symbol, a visual aid for all the nation of Israel to understand that God's way was the way that it was going to be. It was about complaining as well. It was about complaining and the fact that God's people were not supposed to complain anymore, and they were given full evidence that God's way was the way they wanted. And if they chose to do otherwise, they were going to be judged harshly and they were going to be punished. So that's kind of the significance. So we're going to go back and tell the story very quickly about the rebellion of Korah, and then we'll go through the lesson of the rod that budded. So it's a neat little lesson. Shouldn't take too long. It's pretty interesting. So hopefully I can keep you interested in it. So it's the story of the rod of Aaron that budded. Before we go further, though, let's go to God in a word of prayer. Well, as we study this rebellion of Korah, we can turn back to Numbers chapter 16. And I'll tell some of the story and I'll read some of the story. But we've come across a couple fellows that we need to know their names. First of all, we've got Korah. And Korah is the self-appointed leader of a little rebellion that has come up against Aaron and Moses. So we have Korah, and then we have his two co-conspirators. Their names are Dathan and Abiram. And so these three had gotten together and had really gone and done a great job of recruiting, because they had pulled together 250 of the most influential congregational leaders of the tribes of Israel. So they had 252 people that had come up against Moses and Aaron. Now here's something that's interesting. If you go back to Numbers chapter 16, it's very specific. It says that Korah was of the tribe of Levi. And that's kind of important, because we've talked in the past, you know, just because you were a Levite did not mean that you were a priest. But if you were a priest, then you were of the tribe of Levi. But it didn't go both ways. If you were of the tribe of Levi, some of the families led to the priesthood. Others, as the old family tree began to fork a little bit, led to different roles. In fact, Korah's family, as I understand it, they were involved in the breakdown and the moving of the tabernacle. In fact, it was their job to move the holy relics out of the most holy place once the tabernacle had been taken down. They carried the Ark of the Covenant. I suppose they were in charge of carrying the table of showbread and the candlestick and the altar of incense, all those things that were found inside the tabernacle. Korah and his family were responsible for that. Well, apparently they didn't like it. Now, Dathan and Abiram, it says, very plainly, were of the tribe of Reuben. Well, all of a sudden, we got this tribe of Reuben, and we have this Levite who's not a priest, have come together, and they jump all over Moses and Aaron. And they say, listen, we don't like the way this is being done. We don't like the way the tabernacle service is done. They said, you know what? We are all holy. This entire nation is holy. Why in the world are these Levites getting to be the priest? We need to be priests as well. There was only one problem with that, is that he was wrong. He was wrong because this wasn't Moses' decision. It wasn't Aaron's decision who the priesthood would follow, which lineage. It was God's decision. Our entire study last month was following according to the pattern. God set a pattern and said that you had to be a Levite to be a priest. Dathan, Abiram, you cannot be priests, period, because you're of the tribe of Reuben. You can't be a priest. Now, that doesn't mean their role was not important. It doesn't mean that they were not special and set apart and holy. They were just not allowed to be priests. Korah, his bloodline was from the tribe of Levi, but he was from another part of the family. His job was to break down the tabernacle. He was not going to be a priest, but he did not appreciate the way things were going. Numbers 16:3 says, they gathered together against Moses and Aaron and said to them, you take too much upon yourselves. For all the congregation is holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Why then do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord? So they claim that Moses and Aaron were exalting themselves above everyone else. Of course, what did they want to do? They wanted to exalt themselves above the congregation. So they were accusing them of the same things that they desired. Number 16, verse 4, when Moses heard it, he fell on his face. And he spoke to Korah and all his company, saying, tomorrow morning the Lord will show who is his and who is holy, and will cause him to come near to him. The one whom he chooses, he will cause to come near to him. Do this. Take censers, Korah, and all your company. Fire pens, you might say. Things we used to use to pop popcorn with in the fireplace. I suppose it was something like that. Take that censer, that fire pen. It says, put a fire in them and put incense in them before the Lord tomorrow, and it shall be that the man whom the Lord chooses is the Holy One. You take too much upon yourselves, you sons of Levi. All right, so we're going to get these fire pans and we're going to take them out with this censers and it's filled with incense. There's only one problem. Only the priests were allowed to offer sacrifice. So what's going to happen when these Reubenites get up there and start offering sacrifice? Well, I'm here to tell you, it was not going to end well for Dathan and Abiram, and it wasn't going to end well for Korah as well. After he kind of set the scene, Moses then attacked Korah, verbally attacked him. He says, here now, you sons of Levi, is it a small thing to you that the God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself, to do the work of the tabernacle and the Lord, and to stand before the congregation to serve them, and that he has brought you near to himself, you and all your brethren, the sons of Levi with you, and are you also are you seeking the priesthood also? He said, listen, you are serving the people in your role, but that's a lot. Is it a small thing to you? Do you consider that meaningless? But now you want the priesthood as well? And he just wasn't satisfied with his role. I've got a book called John Maxwell. He has what he calls a self-appointed leader. And I want you to notice these five traits. And this is good for business. It's good for any kind of relationship. It's the person who tries to appoint themselves to be the leader. He's got five of them. He's the number one. They cause others to rise up against existing leaders. They're the pot stirrers. They're the ones that are always trying to start something with whoever's in charge. They never like the way things are done, so they try to cause problems. Number two, they publicly criticize and question existing leaders. And now it's even worse with Facebook and with these anonymous comments we can put on newspaper articles. We can question anyone and pretend like we're an expert, and we don't have to say our name. That's what we do. We criticize publicly. Number three, the self-appointed leader accused leaders of what they are guilty of themselves. Exactly what Korah did. He said, Moses and Aaron, you're putting too much upon yourselves. You're trying to exalt yourself. Now get out of the way so we can exalt ourselves. He was accusing Moses and Aaron of what he wanted to do himself. Number four, they despise their given position. They always want more. They always want a higher position. They're never satisfied with what they have. Now, they don't necessarily want to earn it. They want it to be given to them. And then finally, number five, they murmur, complain, and create a negative atmosphere. Not much worse than working with a negative person. Because they can destroy the whole morale of a church, of a company, of a school, whatever organization you want to talk about, negativity can destroy it. And a lot of times, that negativity comes from the self-appointed leader, the one who's decided they ought to be in charge. Well, that's Korah to a T. And now he's got Dathan and he's got Abiram on his side, and he's got 250 of the movers and shakers of the congregation of Israel. Well, here's what happened. Number 16, verse 16. Moses said to Korah, tomorrow you and all your company be present before the Lord, you and they as well as Aaron. Let each take his censer and put incense in it, and each of you bring his censer before the Lord. 250 censers, both you and Aaron, each with his censer. So we've got 250, and now we've got a couple more. Here we go. Every man took his censer, put fire in it, laid incense on it, and stood at the door of the tabernacle of meeting with Moses and Aaron. And Korah gathered all the congregation against them at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. Then the glory of the Lord appeared to all the congregation. And that probably should have been a bad sign when, oh, Korah, when the glory of the Lord appeared at the congregation. Because that was usually a symbol of judgment when the glory of the Lord came. And sure enough, that's what happened. So I went back to my Clint de France picture. I'm trying to figure what this would all look like. When it says tabernacle, sometimes the word tabernacle just refers to the area that was under the tent. And then other times this entire region would be referred to as a tabernacle. Remember there was a fence, about a 7.5 foot tall fence that went all the way around. So I'm trying to get the image here. It says that all of them gathered their censers at the door of the tabernacle. I'm guessing what that means is right up here, right outside the tent is what I'm guessing. That all of them were lined up, 250 men right here with their censers, with their fire pits. And it said Korah got all the congregation of Israel. Now we're talking hundreds of thousands of people to line up at the door of the tabernacle. I'm guessing he means they're out here. They're probably surrounding, watching this great scene. I can't be exact about it, but that's kind of what I figure happened. But we've got all these people. They've gone to this altar here. They've gotten their fire. They put incense on it, but they weren't allowed to do that. That was the job of the priest. So those Reubenites were not supposed to do that. Neither was Korah, because he wasn't of the right lineage of the Levites. But all of a sudden, they got their censers, and they walked up to the door of the tabernacle, and Moses and Aaron met them right there. And here's what the Lord said. Numbers 16, verse 20. And the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, separate yourselves from among this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment. Could you imagine those words being spoken? You need to get out of the way so you're not hit by any blood and guts when I destroy them. You need to separate yourselves from this congregation. And God was not joking. Moses says, listen, verse 29. If these men die naturally like all men, or if they are visited by the common fate of all men, then the Lord has not sent me. But if the Lord creates a new thing, and the earth opens its mouth and swallows them up with all that belong to them, and they go down alive into the pit, then you will understand that these men have rejected the Lord. And about the time Moses stopped his speaking, you could probably hear a little bit of a rumble as the earth began to open up. A little earthquake occurred, a little sinkhole occurred. I don't know what it looked like. But it was enough to suck down 250 people just like that. And the earth closed back over the top of them. Fire broke out. Remember, they all had their censers. And so everything's on fire. It's mass chaos. The earth has opened up and then come back on the top of them. And this is pretty interesting. I never noticed this part before. It says, Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, to pick up the censers out of the blaze, for they are holy, and scatter the fire some distance away. So we had some unholy men go in and get some holy censers and offer up incense. It wasn't the censers' fault. It was the men. It was the fault of the men. They were the ones that were unholy. And so in all of this chaos, all of this fire on the censer is falling down. There's fire caking off everything. The tents are on fire. These people, they've been sucked into the earth. And the priest says, and Aaron says, go tell Eleazar, go pick up all the censers because they're holy. They were set apart for worship. Go get it. And so they walk out and they picked up the censers, and it says, we're going to make an altar. We're going to make an altar covering out of this. So they took those brazen censers and they pounded them all together and made a nice, pretty sheet of metal out of it. And it says here, let them be made into hammered plates as a covering for the altar. Because they presented them before the Lord, therefore they are holy, and they shall be a sign to the children of Israel. So we've got a little picture here now. I'm assuming when it says the altar, they're talking about this brazen altar out here, that there was to be a cover that was made out of the 250 censers that these unauthorized men used. And so every time the children of Israel would walk by that brazen altar, it had a cover on it now, and they'd go, Korah, Dathan, Abiram, and the 250. It was to be a constant, perpetual reminder, don't challenge God. It wasn't Moses' idea that the Levites were to be the priests. That was God's idea. And so now we kind of have a new, we've kind of modified the furniture. God said, I want you to put a cover on there that they'll remember it for always. Number 16 and 40 said it was to be a memorial to the children of Israel that no outsider who was not a descendant of Aaron should come near to offer incense before the Lord that he might not become like Korah and his companions. Don't do it. It was to be a reminder to the children of Israel forever. Only the descendants of Aaron were to be the priest. Unbelievably, though, the complaints continued. It says, on the next day, all the congregation of the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron, saying, you have killed the people of the Lord. Remember, they killed 250 of them, killed their families, and these were the best and the brightest of the movers and the shakers. They were probably the most popular people of the children of Israel. And so now everybody, you killed them all. And they're mad at Moses, and Aaron begin to complain. And so the Lord speaks to Moses again. Here comes that glory of the Lord again. This time I'd have taken off running. Says the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, get away from among this congregation that I may consume them in a moment. Says, and they fell on their faces. And here we go again. God destroying 250 was not enough. It's time to destroy more. A plague starts. Number 17 and 46, Moses said to Aaron, take a censer and put fire in it from the altar, put incense on it, and take it quickly to the congregation and make atonement for them, for wrath has gone out from the Lord, and the plague has begun. So Aaron, in his role of high priest, he goes out and he takes that altar, and goes to the altar, takes that fire, puts the incense on it, and then he quickly, it says he ran into the midst of the congregation. And there's one of the most interesting verses, phrases you may ever find, that he stood between the dead and the living. I want you to get this picture in your mind. The high priest was divinely appointed to minister at God's altar. He was allowed to. He was allowed to offer incense. Not unlike these other guys that were doing it unauthorized. He was allowed. And I want you to get this picture. Aaron was about 90 years old at the time. And so it says he ran with that incense. So I'm trying to get this picture of this 90-year-old man running with this fire pit in his hand with this censer filled with incense, taking off running through the congregation. I can't imagine what that must have looked like. I can't imagine a 90-year-old man doing that, but Aaron did. Go further. I had to think about this for a little bit. He saved the same people who just moments before had been against him. That's kind of hard. I don't like when people talk bad about me. I don't like when people complain and gripe about me. I used to have this in coaching. Sometimes I would have these parents get mad at me. They'd call me everything in the book. But I'd also have their kid in class. So you can say what you want to about my coaching ability or lack thereof, but I'm a pretty good math teacher. And all of a sudden they would need me to help their kid pass that class. Boy, I'd kind of, I didn't want to do it sometimes. You hollered at me and called me everything in the book, and now you need my help, and all of a sudden we're best friends. You know, it's kind of hard sometimes to do what was right, but didn't bother Aaron. Aaron took off. The same people that were questioning his authority and getting after him, he is running with this incense. And the Bible says he stood between the dead and the living. And I want you to understand, that's literal. That is literal. Wherever he was, the plague stopped. So if he got to him in time, they were alive. Past him, they were dead. He stood literally between the dead and the living. And if that's not an image of Jesus Christ, then I don't know what else is. To stand in between life and death, between the dead and the living. What an amazing picture. This old man running through the crowd, trying to save as many as he could. But he didn't save them all. In fact, 14,700 people, it says, died in this plague that God sent. All because of complaining and murmuring by the children of Israel. What this was, though, is God had to take opportunity to confirm Aaron. So here's what he told him to do. The next day, the plague has settled down, things have stopped, and the people obviously are a little bit on edge. They saw 250 of their best and brightest get killed, and the next day, 14,700 of them died. And so now they're a little bit worried. They're probably thinking, well, we're next. So God wants to set the scene, and he wants to make sure everybody's understanding. So he says, here's what I want you to do. He says, I want you to find 12 rods. And again, a rod is nothing more than a tree limb. It's a stick. I want you to take 12 rods, one for each tribe. And it said on each of your tribes, going all the way back to that old, the 12 original tribes, you take the family, that is the head family of that tribe. And I want you to write a name on the rod, so that way there's no mistake as to whose rod was whose. So write your name on it. And he said, on the tribe of Levi, he was going to write the word Aaron on it. And so we had these 12 sticks. I don't know how tall they were. 2-3 feet tall. I don't know. I know we have the dimensions or some semi-dimensions of the tabernacle. I don't know if we're 100% sure that our cubit matches their cubit, but get kind of an idea of how big that box was. I suppose those sticks might have been 3-4 foot tall. Something like that. I don't know. I don't guess it really matters. But they were these old limbs out of trees that they had found and were probably found the straightest that they could find and were the prettiest and had that rod. And so they wrote the name Aaron on it. And then the other 12, the other remaining 11 rods had the tribe name written on it. And so then God says, I want you to do, we're going to take all 12 of these rods and we're going to place them inside the most holy place right there in front of the Ark of the Covenant. Now remember, nobody could go in there. Only the high priest. So no one could sneak in. No one could go in and switch out. No one could go in and replace one rod with another. This is the most secure place you could imagine. So these 12 rods were placed in the most holy place. Number 17 now, we've changed chapters, 17 and 8. It says, now it came to pass on the next day that Moses went into the tabernacle of witness, and behold, the rod of Aaron of the house of Levi had sprouted and put forth buds, had produced blossoms, and yielded ripe almonds. So this dead stick, all of a sudden, budded, and it sprouted, and had blossoms, and it had ripe almonds on it. The other 11 sticks were still sticks. And that was God's way of showing, I chose Levi. I chose Levi and his descendants. I chose Aaron and his descendants to be the priests. No one else. Not the tribe of Judah, not the tribe of Reuben, not, and all the way down the list. I chose the tribe of Levi. I want you to notice this. I love these some of these stories about how God would exceed expectations. Remember how when the children of Israel crossed the Red Sea and God parted the waters for them? It wasn't enough just to part the waters. No. He let them cross on dry ground. He not only got the water out of the way, He dried the ground for them so they could walk across. It's kind of the same idea here. Would it have been enough for that dead limb to sprout overnight? Absolutely. That's a miracle in and of itself. That doesn't happen. Dead tree limbs don't sprout. But not only did it sprout, it also had some buds on it. And not only did it have buds on it, it had blossoms on it. And not only did it have blossoms on it, it had almonds on it. And not only did it have almonds, it had ripe almonds. And I think each one of those words is very important because it showed how God exceeded the simplest expectations. He could have stopped with the sprout and He had me there. But God wanted to make sure everybody knew. This was not a fake. This was not a copy. This is nothing else short of a miracle that this dead limb could produce all of this at one time. It wasn't the old bait and switch. Nobody snuck into the tabernacle, into the most holy place, and traded out the rod that had Aaron's name on it with another one that they cut off of a tree. No, this was a dead limb that had sprouts, buds, blossoms, almonds, and ripe almonds on it. Amazing. This was God's will. It's not something you could find in nature. It was God's will. Well, then the best part is, number 17 and 9, then Moses brought out all the rods from before the Lord to all the children of Israel. So he set those other 11 rods out. And guess what? They were still sticks. And each one of the family had to come up and they'd pick up their stick. And they would look over at Levi's, Aaron's stick that was now bloomed, and they walked off. So they looked and each man took his rod. And that was God's way of saying, I did not choose you, Reuben. I did not choose you, Judah. I did not choose you. And he went down the list. I chose Levi. Don't question me. Don't question my authority. Rods become a symbol of authority through the rest of the Bible. And we'll talk about that here in a couple of weeks. Number 17:10 said, the Lord said to Moses, bring Aaron's rod back before the testimony, or the Ark of the Covenant, to be kept as a sign against the rebels, that you may put their complaints away from me, lest they die. So God said to Moses, now go get the stick. Now that we've made our point, we have our visual representation, bring it back and put it into the Ark of the Covenant. Now I want you to think about this. We talked about the tablets of stone. There's a pot of manna, and there's Aaron's rod that budded. That's what was found inside of the Ark of the Covenant. Who would see those? Who would see those objects? Well, if they're in the most holy place, and they were inside the Ark of the Covenant, nobody was allowed in there except the high priest once a year. That's where God dwelled. That's where God dwelled. This is a memorial for God daily to see and for the high priest once a year. You know, each one of these show God's mercy and His care for His people, but they also show how God's people will rebel. Remember the first tablet of stone Moses had to break because that's when they made the golden calf. And then they sat there and broke most of those commandments continually. It was a symbol of rebellion as well as mercy. The pot of manna, remember how the people complained and whined about the manna? Oh, I wish we could go back to Egypt. At least they had onions and cucumbers back there. At least we could have something good to eat. They complained about the manna. God provided for them, but they also complained. And then we have Aaron's rod that budded, which was the greatest symbol of all of what happens when God's people rebel against God's word. He said, it's my pattern. This is what I want you to do. And here is a visual reminder. Don't forget. Do what I tell you to do. And that's what happened. No more complaints, he said. Well, certainly. The complaints from the children of Israel did not stop on this day. They continued to complain. And they would complain until eventually they were taken over by different foreign countries and whatnot. But what does that mean? This murmuring, I believe what it's talking about, is not going to be regarded by God. God wasn't going to listen to it, and God wasn't going to try to negotiate with them. The rules had been set, and now these murmurings would be judged very harshly by God because the rules had been set. In conclusion, I'm kind of like Paul. I thought about this, and I saw this study last time, and I didn't realize this would be Easter Sunday, wouldn't it? The dead stick yielded forth life at God's command. So can you see a beautiful representation of Aaron's rod that budded as we talk about the resurrection? That the resurrection of our Lord Jesus Christ also shows how life can spring forth from death. We had a dead stick. Nothing more than a stick that you could find anywhere laying out in the countryside. put it inside the holy place, the most holy place, and at God's command, that stick had blossoms, it sprouted, it budded, it brought forth some almonds, and it brought forth ripe almonds ready to eat. Just like how the resurrection of Jesus Christ shows how life can spring forth from death. Isaiah 11:1 says, "And there shall come forth a rod out of the stem of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots." And we're going to talk about this word rod later on when we look at our Revelation study, because it comes all the way. It starts with Moses, and it runs all the way through the book of Revelation, this concept of the rod. It's a symbol of power. It's a symbol of authority. And God's authority was shown by the rod of Aaron. And the fact that Aaron's rod budded, something dead became alive, I'm pretty sure is a reference to the resurrection. 1 Corinthians 15:21, "For since by man came death, by man came also the resurrection of the dead. Through death comes life." And that's the message of Aaron's rod that budded. And that was to be a reminder. It's to be a perpetual reminder to the children of Israel. It sat in that Ark of the Covenant to remind, number one, this is God's command. This is what God wanted. This is God's authority. This is how it has to be done. But number two, there's a story of not only punishment and judgment, but God says He's going to be merciful and life could spring forth from death. And it sets the stage for the whole Messiah and resurrection. And what a beautiful, beautiful story. So I'll leave the lesson with you this evening. We never like to close without having a song of invitation.